Well, it's good to be here. Still feels like home in very many ways. When I was coming in 50 from the east, it just felt like I was coming home again. 50 was every bit as long as it was 2 years ago. I'd like to start with a question. In the psalm that Marvin read, why should we praise the Lord? Or why should everything that has breath praise the Lord? He is the Creator. Good, thank you. Anything else? He gave us life.
He allowed us to be born in a community where we have freedom of worship.
Thank you. There's numerous different reasons. Bottom line, all of these is he is worthy. And only him. Do you ever wonder why the cattle should praise the Lord? He hasn't done all that much for them, I didn't really think. But he is still worthy. Okay, I'm going to try to jam this all into some sort of decent time frame. I'm going to start out with a few pictures of Romanian countryside, and I apologize right up front. One thing that everybody wants to see is pictures of everyday life, and that's the one thing I don't take pictures of. Who takes pictures of everyday life? So, I don't have many of them. But I have a few. I'm going to start out with pictures of Romania, different places in it, basically trying to get you to come visit. And then I'm going to run into a, hopefully, very brief history of Romania, because it's difficult to understand any people without understanding their history. And then get into what we, in general, do there, and then what I, in particular, am involved in. Hope this thing cooperates. We shall see. Most of these are just pictures of the Carpathian Mountains, or some of them are, in western Romania. Could almost look like Switzerland some places. We drove up this road. It was supposed to be closed, but we drove up anyway. And until it was drifted shut, the road had 4 or 5 feet of snow over it up at the top. So obviously we couldn't go further. But the view from up there was amazing, and the road was incredibly steep. There you can see some of the switchbacks going down. I'm standing on the road there, and you can see 3 more pieces of the road further down going around switchbacks. This is the Danube River flowing through what they call the Iron Gates. It's where it cuts through the Carpathian Mountains. He should have known I'm going to wander around. All right. Yes?
I didn't hear the name of the river.
What?
The Danube.
Oh, okay. It cuts through the Carpathian Mountains here and has cliffs on both sides. I'm thinking 500 to 700 feet on both sides of the river. And here we're sitting on top. Janet and I were down there. This is driving a cut in the mountains because it's not terribly far from Romania, from where we live there, and I think I have a video clip that Tom took a little bit later. This is Black Sea, Constanza. Just looks like the sea. I mean, everybody talks about the Black Sea. I wasn't really impressed. This is the Danube River Delta, which is incredibly beautiful in the springtime. Now, we get into Romanian history. And by the way, thank you, Daryl, for just spitting out a question. If any of you have any questions, please feel free. I'll try to give you time at the end. But if you have any at any point, feel free to ask them. Getting into the history of Romania, this was just some artifacts that they dug up from all the way back to the Stone Age. This is the oldest ruins we visited. The Greek city of Argamum on the Black Sea was built in the 6th century B.C. and abandoned in the 2nd century B.C. So 2,100 years at least. And the greatest part about these ruins is they're not commercialized. You can go and poke around and do whatever you want. They're still ruins. Now, this is when we start getting into recorded history. This picture of the wall of Sarmizegetusa Regia, which is the capital of the Dacian Empire. A short history of the Dacians, which the Romanians are very proud of. The Dacians were known to be some of the best fighters in Europe. As a matter of fact, well, the Dacian king, if that's what you want to call him, his name was Decebal. About the year 100, AD 100, started raiding Roman settlements. The northern frontier of the Roman Empire was the Danube River in what now forms the southern border of Romania. Just north of that was the Dacian Empire. And, okay, now I was going to start that again. And Decebal started raiding Roman settlements that were south of the Danube. Bad idea, but whatever. And Diocletian was the new Roman emperor, and he needed somewhere, you know, to show how big he was. So he went up to fight them, and the Dacians fought the Romans to a draw. The Romans withdrew, and then Diocletian secretly sent a messenger to Decebal asking him for conditions of peace. And get this, the Dacians placed the Romans under tribute for about 3 years. I didn't know that anybody ever placed the Roman Empire under tribute, particularly at its height, but they did. They had to pay them quite a bit of money every year to stay away. Now, 3 years went by, and Diocletian was assassinated, and his successor was Trajan, a young general. And the first thing on his agenda was taking care of the Dacian problem. Decebal, the king of the Dacians, appealed to Trajan for peace, and Trajan was having none of it. He decided, it is us or you, not both of us. And he invaded. Now, I'll get to that a little bit later. These are the ruins yet. I think the ruins would still be, or the city would still be there if it hadn't been that the Romans, when Romans destroy things, they kind of do a pretty good job of it. And so the ruins that are there is what the Romans left. This is a picture of one of the gates. These things were about 8 feet wide, and these blocks were just a little bit bigger, well, about twice as big maybe, as a 10-inch concrete block out of cut stone. They used no mortar, stacked them on top of each other, filled in with dirt between the two walls, and ran wooden cross pieces in it to tie the things together. They say that the Roman catapults could do nothing against these walls. The Romans eventually had to go through the gates to take the city. That was one of the roads that they actually dug up down to the pavement. Going down to their holy area, their temple area, the big round rock there in front of you is an altar. They're not completely sure what kind of religion the Dacians had, but that was one of their altars. They do know that. And you notice the drainage ditch running under it, that was for draining the blood. And all these drainage ditches were big rocks that were carved out and laid in there. You can see the pieces. I can't imagine the amount of work that it took But they did it. It had a very, very good drainage system. You can see more ditches there. This was an astrolabe. I guess they studied the stars. That's really all I know about it. But they say that that's what they used it for. These were pieces of carbonized wheat from the Dacian era that one of the men dug out of the ground and gave to me. They really do look like kernels of wheat. It's just they've turned to carbon in the last 2,000 years. I think my sister still has them somewhere. And this is what Decebal is supposed to look like, the Dacian king. And now this brings us again to the Roman invasion. This is Trajan's bridge pillar. Trajan came up to the Danube, spent a year and a half building a bridge across the Danube. He was going to do it right. And one of the pillars on the Romanian bank still stands, or the remains of it, which you can see there. This is the Roman garrison built on the north side of the Danube. The ruins are still there. Some of it you can see in the far part there has been in some measure rebuilt. The near part is still the original ruins. And there you can see the ruins in the foreground and one of the big barges that's forever running the Danube. This is inside of Sadum Segetusa Ulpia Traiana, which is the Roman capital built nearby. They had an amphitheater there. I guess the Romans were big into their amphitheaters or something, because they built one there, held 5,000 to 6,000 people. That was their entrance for the fighters, whether it was gladiators or whether it was animals. I'm not sure exactly what all they did there, but these things went outside and came up inside the amphitheater. One of the pillars in one of the temples still standing. And just a bunch of ruins. Again, this cost a little bit to get into, I think. $2.50 or something. $2.50, something like that. And then you can go poke around to your heart's content. This was a Roman bath. And actually, they still offer them. If we'd have paid I think it was about $80. Or was it 80 lei? I don't remember for sure. They would have given us a Roman bath and massage, just like they did back in the day. We passed on that. It's another one of the Roman towns. A toilet sitting on its side there. But I didn't think it was too bad for 2,000 years ago. I mean, some of the ones there today are quite a step down from that, I thought. But anyway, fortified church. They had quite a few of these. This is getting up into the later era. After the Romans withdrew, they were only in there for about 200 years. Although the Romanian language is still very, very Latin. It is one of the most Latin languages, second, I am told, only to Italian. But the Romans very much left their language there. And part of the reason was they killed so many of the Dacians and then they colonized the area because of the gold that was there. It is said that Decebal had, I was going to look this up and I forgot, how many tons of gold and silver that he wanted. When Trajan was coming, Decebal knew the game was up. But he didn't want the Romans to get his gold and silver, so he diverted one of the rivers there, buried it in the stream bed, ran the river back over it, and killed the servants that had done it, so the Romans would not be able to find it. Only him and his personal butler knew where this stuff was hidden. When the Romans conquered Sadum Segetusa, Decebal killed himself, but his butler spilled the beans in exchange for his life. So the Romans went and dug it up. I am told that from that point on, the Roman coins were about 40% thicker than they had been before that time because of the flood of Romanian gold and silver that was coming in. Anyway, they built a lot of fortified churches back then. You can see here the wall outside with the church inside. Their churches doubled as fortresses. And I'm not even sure what that was. We went and climbed around on it for a while. But I don't recall anymore when it was built. It was one of their watchtowers. This is a castle that's been rebuilt. And we didn't actually go into it because we thought it was expensive. Looking back now, it's kind of ridiculous. It cost 30 lei, which is about $8 to get in. But everything else over there was anywhere from $1 to $3 was on the high side. So we thought $8 was kind of exorbitant, so we didn't go in. But it was an impressive castle. This is another one that we did go into. I found that picture there interesting. The gallows in the foreground there, and the Orthodox church in the back. This is the wall, city of Sibiu. Still have some of the old walls there. This I found interesting. This was in their prison in one of their fortresses. Methods of torture that they used. I think down here in the center, I think they're skinning him. They did quite a bit of that. And over here, one of their methods was just hang him up by their feet and cut him in half. They seem to get a kick out of that. I'm not sure why, but and that again is the Orthodox Church. Another one, a couple of different churches inside. Their architecture is impressive. It's a Lutheran church in the city of Sibiu. Had to be careful there. The city of Sibiu is a very German city. And one time there were a couple of people walking past me, and I don't remember what I said, but I made some snide comment to Janet in Dutch. And suddenly caught myself, because most people around there understand German. And if they understand German, they usually understand Dutch. You can't just make snide comments about people walking past like you can most places in Dutch. Who understands Dutch? But in Sibiu, you had to be careful. In this church, they still have services every Sunday. Three services, one in Hungarian, one in Romanian, and one in German. We climbed up into the tower and had a beautiful view of the city of Sibiu. Okay, now into what we do there. This is a seed meeting. Titus is there preaching. Romania is about 85% Orthodox, but
the,
thank you. Romanian Orthodox, which is very similar to Greek and Russian Orthodox, they divide the people in Romania into two categories, Orthodox and what they call pukaits, or repenters. If you're not a repenter, you're an Orthodox. You were born Romanian, therefore you're Orthodox. That's their way of looking at it. If you repented, you become in some ways a target, because if, in my opinion, if there is one category of people today that is the modern-day equivalent of the scribes and Pharisees of Jesus' day, it is the priests. They hold, to the Orthodox way of thinking, they hold the power of heaven and hell. And therefore, a priest's power over the people is tremendous. When a person repents, the priest loses his power over that person. And therefore, they do everything in their power to discourage people from repenting. That's, I know, it's totally backward, but it's the way things are.
Is there some similarity to Catholics or not?
Quite a bit, yes. They do not have a pope, so to speak. But they do have, I think they have a council of bishops that oversees the church. Many of their rituals are very similar. They cross themselves, but they do it differently. And some of those kind of things. But they are similar. I would say they are very, very similar to what the Catholic Church was in the Middle Ages, minus the persecution. The Catholic Church of today has opened up, I think, to some extent, to in allowing other people to practice their religion. And even, it seems to me that in the Catholic Church, there are some people that have repented. In the Orthodox Church, there are very, very few, because if you repent very quickly, you end up getting pushed out. That's my impression. This is seed meeting. Many of these people are considered Orthodox. They never go to church, but that's what they are because they're Romanian. They're gypsies. We distribute seeds as well as literature. This is the village where I lived. In fact, the green gate down there that you can see all the way at the far end was Gabby's house, where I spent the first several months. When it rained, it was a mess. The roads were completely impassable. And where I lived later at Emil and Tietz's, this was a view from the front door. I'm standing actually inside the house. And the outhouse, you can see the little trail swinging to the left there, down past the well. And it was slippery. Very slippery. And there were a number of times when I landed in my face in the middle of the night on the way down to use the outhouse. That's what you got. Again, I didn't think that Roman toilet looked all that bad. But anyway. Emil's profession is milking sheep. And selling the cheese that's made from it. This is their house during the springtime. It's a beautiful place. It's just during the winter, it's always dreep, rainy, or snowy, as the case may be. Spring and fall is a mess. Okay, this is Janet's classroom last year, because I didn't have a picture of it this year. The two bigger girls, one on the left and one on the right, are now my students. But singing in the morning at school. I'll backtrack here in a little bit and get back to some of this. Three of my students, Talitha on the right, who is my niece Marvin's granddaughter, and the others are natives. Playing outside. I don't have any better pictures of my students, so I took them out, taught them how to shoot a bow one day, and those are the only pictures that I had of them. Rebecca is the one holding the bow. Talitha is the one looking on. And here Andrea is shooting with Antonella watching. Okay, we'll get back to that in just a little bit. I have a few video clips that Tom took when he was there. Not responsible for the content. It was a dirty job. I couldn't believe they actually ate that stuff. Here we go with the projector. Very. And they knew which ones got milked and which ones didn't. They blocked the door with their knees there on the right between them when one was coming through that needed to be milked. If it didn't need to be milked, then they let it on through. Claudio was back there, supposed to be pushing through, but sometimes, if there was a line of them coming through, it worked great, because they tend to follow each other, but when there was nothing coming through, then sometimes you get that. was the next few are from when Tom and Nelson and Mike and Jason were over. Absolutely the best week. I don't know if you can understand completely, but if you're the only single guy in an area and you get four of your friends coming over to hang out.
Mike's eating ants. Yoder's eating ants. Craig's eating ants. Allison's gonna eat an ant.
And I already eat an ant.
Okay, here we go.
I think it's good. There you go. Grab him. I got him.
I thought I had him.
There he is. Baby.
Son. There you go. Here, Yoder, your turn. Did you ever taste that sweet clover stuff?
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
You might not believe it, but what Tom said there was actually true. That sweet clover stuff, that's what they tasted like. All it is wind noise. This is driving up through a natural cut in the mountains where a stream cut through. Beautiful countryside. A little tight, but and actually, you missed it right there. The truck right behind that one just pulled out to pass when we came around the corner, and he kind of stuffed himself in rather quickly. This is driving back to the village in which I lived. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me restart this. Tom is narrating. Good luck with that.
This is the roughest road in America. I'm not touching the steering wheel.
Not in America, you
idiot. Wait, this isn't America. My bad. Okay, this is somewhere in the middle of nowhere, Romania. Yeah. I think the car is going to die soon. And there's all the honey badgers in the back. Okay, I'll stop that now. Yoder up here just trying to stay alive, I think. Okay, well, he gave up trying to stay alive. He's going to die soon. And anyhow,
hey, Craig, we're off of it. It's good now. Stop.
I don't know. Craig claims it's good, but hey, I'm in second gear now, so I think we made it to second base. That's good. Anyway, I've got other things to do at the moment. Love you, bye.
And this was at an Orthodox candlelight service. You can't really see the candles because the people have their backs turned. I don't know what a Muslim called a prayer sounds like, but I've been told it sounds somewhat similar. Maybe some of you that know could tell me. Okay, you can bring on the lights. Thank you. Okay, now back to school and what my job description is. Let me start with the Romanian educational system. The problem with the American educational system is that it is dumbed down to the point where anybody can pass. The problem with the The Romanian public school system, it is amped up to the point where only the most intelligent, most motivated students can make it. They say the top 3-5% actually come out of school with a good education. The rest of them get lost somewhere, usually in the first two grades. And they get passed on up through school, learning practically nothing, and come out the end with no education. So when they come to our school, if they come from the Romanian school, usually we're dealing with a very, very low level of education. Andrei had just finished eighth grade. She could add and subtract, read and write. She did not know her multiplication tables. She could not tell me how many meters were in a kilometer. But she just finished eighth grade, and she actually passed the exit exam. And I was wondering how until I actually looked at one. 50% is required to pass those exit exams. And when I looked down over them, approximately 50% of the questions were extremely hard. And the other half were very, very easy. So you can pass them without knowing practically anything because it's stacked to do that. 50% of the questions are easy enough so that practically anybody can answer them. But then they come out of school knowing almost nothing. As a matter of fact, okay, years ago the general practice was to get your high school diploma, you cheat. Everybody did that. In fact, you paid your teachers to tell you how. Take your phone in with you. Three or four of them the teachers usually recommended, so if one got caught, you still had several others to fall back on. You had to go through scanners, and the teachers taught you how to take care of the phone so they'd get through the scanners. And one of my friends, back before, of course, he knew that it was wrong. Actually, well, I'll get to that a little bit later. He had three phones on him. He got all three of them through. He thought it was probably due to the prayer that they had before they went in. The students actually had a prayer meeting asking God to close the eyes of the people that were supposed to keep them from cheating. They got in, got their phones in, and they had they have a few guards in there when they're taking the test, but they were all paid off. Their function was then to alert the students to when anybody else was coming, anybody that was not paid off, to alert the students to get their phones out of sight so they didn't appear to be cheating. That was the way the system was set up. It's a little more difficult to cheat now, and what that means is because you almost have to have a high school diploma in order to get a job, people keep going to high school and going to high school and going to high school. Mariana is our secretary. She is, I think, 25 or 26, and she is still going to high school, trying to get, because you've lost your, you'd never got your education coming up through school, and now you're trying to get your high school diploma with nothing to build it on top of. And it's very, very difficult to do. Anyway, these are the students that are coming into our school, and we now have the privilege of trying to repair some of that damage. Now, you know as well as I do, some of that is irreparable. If you've lost that until you're that age, Andrea is 17, it's a whole lot harder to learn when you're that age. Another problem that goes along with that is the lack of English. Now, they understand English quite well. But if you've ever learned a foreign language, you know that listening to it all day long wears the brain down. Because you have to concentrate so hard. Even if you understand it, you have to concentrate. And as it gets toward the end of the day, I find often they start zoning out. And by zoning out, I mean they've been doing that all the way up through school. So it's second nature that when things get a little too difficult, you just zone out. Speaking of which, in the public school, Andrea said that often she couldn't even hear the teacher from where she was sitting. It was so loud in the classroom. The teacher very soon figured out who the ones were that were up to par, and they were sat all the way up here in the front. The teacher taught them. The rest of the students could do whatever they wanted to. And since she wasn't one of the select few, she was in the back somewhere. Couldn't hear the teacher, didn't know what was going on, and just kept being passed up through school. As a teacher, it's infuriating when you look back at that. The education, the 8 years that they were robbed of, it makes me mad that somebody would actually do that. Just teach to the few in the front and the rest of you, I really don't care. You can just go home as far as I'm concerned. You have to be here because the law says so. But as far as your education, see if I care. That's the attitude that the teachers have. And it also helps when the parents of the really smart ones pay the teacher to tutor them in the afternoons. It's illegal, but it helps the teacher's paycheck, and it actually encourages them not to do a good job during the day so that the students whose parents are not paying them to put in this extra time don't get the education. So it helps their paycheck. So that's what we're dealing with. It is a lot of fun. It gets frustrating sometimes, especially at the beginning of the year. Ask a question like, if you have 180 eggs distributed among six families, how many eggs does each family get? No clue how to go about solving that problem. And the problem is, number one, they have almost not worked with division at all. And number two, any of their math, or very little of their math, has actually been applied math. They've learned how to do columns of figures, but they never learned how to actually use it. Story problems is not something they do. Some of the things that go along with the English problem is atrocious spelling. I did not know, actually, that spelling could be that bad. And eventually you kind of learn how to read it. But I remember particularly one that I got. It's not uncommon to try to figure out what she's writing. And if you figure it out in context, you usually figure out what the word was supposed to be. M-I-R-O. What word is that? M-I-R-O. The word is middle. M-I-R-O. Middle. It actually makes kind of sense if you know the Romanian grammar, but you can't really get much further off than that. It's fairly typical of much of the spelling. They would spell it exactly like it sounded using Romanian phonetics. And if you knew how to read Romanian, then you could often figure out what they were trying to say. What is our goal? Well, the long-term goal, we teach in English simply because we don't have another option. The Romanian curriculum is a mess. There is no good Romanian curriculum. There is no such thing as homeschool, or practically not. There is no such thing as private school. Everybody goes to the public school. I think it comes probably from the communist system, when there was no such thing. There are people that are starting to ask, can you do anything for us? Even people in the Baptist and Pentecostal churches, our children are getting indoctrinated in the public school. What are our options? Right now, we don't really have much. There is talk of translating CLE's curriculum. If we do that, that's going to be a huge project, going to take a number of years. But we do have the vision to make good Christian curriculum accessible to Romanians. We teach English because we actually have English teachers and are capable of doing that. There are a few families that are planning to start that this year who do not live in our area, where in cases where one of the parents knows English, and they're actually going to try to homeschool their children using CLE's curriculum. We'll see how it goes. I don't know. Yes?
Is there no problem with the government, your school or private school?
Yes, there is. The way that we're getting around that right now is, at least for our school, I can't say for the Romanian families, But I think it's the same for them. Our school is going under CLE, and they are therefore registered in an American, a foreign school. That's the way that we're getting around it. The question has come up, how much is an American diploma worth? Everything is so crooked over there that there are people that say, well, you know, if somebody sees your diploma, they'll just think you bought it because you can buy anything. We don't know, but currently we don't have much of another option. For the two oldest girls, we're trying to get them a vocational diploma from CLE because we really don't have the any other options. Would have liked to get them a general diploma, but with that kind of a level of education, Andrea's going to be 18 by the time school starts. You really don't want her in school another 5-6 years. So that's, at present, our best course of option. Best course of action, sorry. And other than that, my job description is very similar to an American school teacher. One of the things we stress is how the culture in which you live. It's positive points and it's negative points. If you're an American school teacher, you know that that is one of the things that we try to teach our students. American society is very individualistic, and we try to teach our students that we exist as the body of Christ, not each individual. Things like that. The Romanian culture has its own unique problems. One of them is, as mentioned, dishonesty. Dishonesty is so rampant that it's not even considered wrong. The cheating is considered normal. I'll give you an example. Emil was talking to a boy in the hills. I think some of you heard this story already. Emil was talking to a boy in the hills one day. That was in fourth grade, same grade as Claudio. He wanted to find out how much the boy was learning relative to how much Claudio was learning, who was my student at the time. So he asked him to go to school, yes, here in Takuta. Can you tell me what is 8 times 7? I don't know. Ask him a couple of multiplication problems. Didn't know any of them. Said, you're not very good at math, are you? Said, the boy said, nah, not really. Okay, you're learning any foreign languages? English, French, German, anything like that? No, he's not learning any of them. Geography, do you know any geography? Because I was working with the European capitals with Claudio right then. He said, do you know any geography? He said, yes, I'm good at geography. I aced the last geography test we had. He said, good, what is the capital of Hungary, which is the next country over? The boy said, I don't know. The capital of Italy. Didn't know that one. The capital of France? He said, I thought you were good at geography. How did you ace that last geography test? The boy said, I looked off the test of the boy in front of me. And to his mind, he was good at geography because he aced the test. He was not kidding when he said he's good at geography. He really believed it because he aced the test. How he got the grade is irrelevant to their mind. So those are some of the things that we fight. When they come into our school, it's considered acceptable. Another example, one of the boys at school was throwing stones at the neighbor's apple tree, trying to get an apple to fall on our side of the fence. You know, it hangs out over our side a little bit, so he's trying to get these apples to fall. In their culture, there's nothing wrong with that, as long as you get away with it. I mean, the neighbor would like it if he saw it, but, well, some of the things that we work on. Another thing is don't stand out in their culture. Again, I think it comes from the communists. You do not want to stand out. They try very hard to blend in dress, in action, everything. Just be normal. And that can be difficult for people. We are different. We are to be different from the people around us in multiple ways. They do not talk. People do not talk to each other. They're very rude. After I was there about 3 or 4 months, I asked one of the men in church, how do you say excuse me in Romanian? He He told me. I said, I thought so, but I haven't heard it yet. I was just checking if they have the word. He said, oh, yes, they have it. They just don't use it. Getting bumped in the store is completely okay. They don't have this personal bubble, you know. Standing in line is a nightmare for an American. Romanians, they say, there's a saying over there that if a Romanian sees a line, he'll go stand in it. They just stand in line, and they stand very, very close. Very close. If there's enough room to get another person in between, another person will step in. I went to town one day to get visa work done, and went to the end of the line, and, you know, left what I thought was an acceptable, considerate amount of room between me and the next person. The next person that comes to the end of the line just steps in front of me. Okay, you step back, and the next person along does the same thing. Well, this isn't going to work, so take a deep breath and just enough so nobody can get in front of you. And then the next lady in line was substantial, and she comes along and stands flat against my back. I mean, I'm like, okay. And I had to stand in that line for 5 hours. And she was pretty well against my back most of the time. Janet, if she's standing in line, likes to have two pieces of luggage. One in the front and one in the back. And you just move them along so that nobody can step in front of you, but you can still keep that American distance between us. I went skating one time, and there they take your shoes and you get a number, you know. They keep them in the back room so they don't get stolen. And, well, everybody had to get off the ice at a certain time. I got off the ice, went to get my shoes. There was no line there. It's just a mass of people. And this was just a few months ago. But I'm still American enough that I couldn't just be too self-assertive and use my elbows. So I ended up getting my shoes almost dead last. Everybody just whoomp. I tried to stay out of the way. It's more comfortable that way. It's the way they are, and it's something that we try to teach. Common courtesy. Many Romanians know that they are rude. They know that it is rude to step in front of another person in line, but if there's a space there, then I'm going to do it. So it's something, again, that's kind of ingrained in many of the students. Stealing, as was mentioned, goes along with the dishonesty issue. It's huge. The gypsies, they make their living that way. Many of them are taught how to steal at birth. As soon as they can walk, they are taught how to steal. And it's difficult to know how open can you be with these people. If you let them into your house, your stuff starts disappearing. As soon as your back is turned, things go into their pockets. So can you never invite them? You keep them out of your house? How do you deal with that? And that's something that we work with. So that is some of the things that we deal with. I'd like to wrap up with this. Never, ever take for granted the fact that you can speak a word for the Lord in your own mother tongue. It's, we take those privileges for granted until you lose them, as is the case with many privileges. But I never realized, when you meet somebody and you want to say something to them, I saw a man in the bus one day that was crossing himself so often, I took to timing him. And on average, he was crossing himself every 20 seconds. I wanted to talk to him. I wanted to see, you know, is he studying to be a priest? Or, you know, why does he? I couldn't. I simply didn't know the language well enough. And never take for granted the fact that you have that capability. Anybody that you meet, practically, you can communicate with perfectly. And it's such a privilege for those that go to another culture. When you come back to the States, everybody speaks English. Everybody is, in this case, friendly. I understand their culture, and they understand mine, at least to a certain extent. Nothing is foreign. Utilize that privilege that you have. It becomes very easy to just live your life and let other people live theirs. But if you have the opportunity, talk to other people about the Lord. It's so easy here when people speak your language. Okay, I will give just a few minutes for questions, and then I'll be done. Yes?
Have you done any formal language training?
No. At least not really. I started with Silvio. He is one of the young men that goes to church over there, and he is actually one of the ones that came out of the public school system speaking good English. He got it. He was one of the top 3 to 5%. You tell him something one time, he remembers it just forever. And so he was one of the ones I would go to a lot, especially in church. I'd hear a word often repeated or something, and I'd write it down, and then I'd ask him what this word means. I've done a little bit of that with him. Also, they have Romanian class at school, and I'm often sitting in on that. Some of it now I get, some of it I don't. But I have not done any formal language study per se. The first year, I lived down there in Mecheshd, and that was a pretty good language study in and of itself, since nobody spoke English there. But otherwise, no. Any others? Yes.
You mentioned the gypsies, am I right that a certain number of gypsies have responded to the gospel message?
Yes. As a matter of fact, my students are half gypsy. Their mother is full-blooded gypsy. She is illiterate, but a very dedicated Christian now. They are, in part, it seems, of course, that the more outcast they are, the better they seem to respond. And the gypsies are outcasts. Part of it is their own fault, I think, because they are known to be thieves. As a matter of fact, there was a man over there that lives in Canada, came from Romania, and he came to church one time. He was telling us that Canadians are racists. When they hear you talking Romanian, they look at you like you come from the moon. And John said, well, a lot of Romanians are racist. I mean, look at the way gypsies are viewed. The man said, gypsies, that's the way they are. They can't help it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so who is racist? But that's the way that the culture views many of them. And it makes it a little more difficult, even for them, Andrea and Antonella especially. Rebecca, you can't really tell. She looks a little more white. But Andrea and Antonella are definitely part gypsy. And in some cases, that means as soon as you walk in, there's a wall up. And partly because of that, some of these gypsies are, yes, starting to respond to the gospel message. Any more? Okay. My time is up and more. Marvin, I'll be back to you.